Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dare to Design podcast with me, Karen Hilsinger, a graphic design student just trying to figure it out. Join me as I learn more about the industry and interview designers of all backgrounds, getting a look into what the life of a graphic designer is really like. All right, everyone, hello, and welcome to today's episode. For this episode, I chat with Sarah Hall, the owner of McKinley Media. She is a brand and web designer who, honestly, I aspire to be within the next couple years. She is so professional and she has such good insight, a lot about the marketing aspects of how to market yourself as a designer. So, yeah, I hope you enjoy, and let's get to it. So, hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
So, I guess let's start by just introduce yourself.
Yeah, so I am Sarah. I am the owner of McKinley Media, which is basically a branding and web design company. So that is my current job right now. That's what I've been doing for about officially the past year and a half, unofficially about 4 years. It's been really awesome. It's been so much fun. I enjoy, you know, talking to people like you about it and helping other people. So it's been awesome. It's been great.
Yeah, like when I first found your account and I saw like your studio and everything, I was like, wow, this is like, that's like what I envisioned for myself. But yeah, like you just put it into like reality. I was like, oh, like this is possible. Like people do it. I'm not just like going to be like a starving artist or whatever they call it. Like it'll be okay if, you know, yeah, you put in the work for it. So that's really what I wanted to talk to you about, is like starting your own studio and everything. But we'll get into that. Did you go to school for design or were you like self-taught?
So I am self-taught in design. I actually went to school for marketing and administration, which has really helped me, you know, own my own business and kind of market myself. I personally would recommend going, if you're wanting to start your own business, going to school for something along those lines. Design is, you know, you can learn it on YouTube or you can learn it on Skillshare, or, you know, learning from another designer is always great as well. So I think, you know, if you don't major in design, it's not the end of the world. And if it's something you want to do as your job, it's super easy to learn on your own versus in school.
Yeah, I found that very quickly. As a freshman, I was taking all design classes since I am a design major, but I added two business minors. So digital marketing and then advertising, because I was like, so once I do this, like, where does it go? Like, how do I know what it's used for? So once I started getting into those classes, I was like, oh, I could do this all myself rather than working for someone else.
Awesome. Yeah, that's honestly a good idea. You could like major in design and then like you're doing, just have a couple of minor classes in business and you're good to go.
Yeah, for sure. Before we get any deeper into this episode, I just wanted to put a little disclaimer in about the audio. I honestly don't know what was happening. I think I was having some glitches with the Zoom call where my recording just crapped out basically for 12 minutes. So I re-recorded some sections. I hope you don't notice it, but yeah, just please keep that in mind and bear with me. I'm still pretty new to this whole podcast thing. So yeah, let's get back into the episode. So let's move now into talking about your business. So when did you start your studio?
So I officially started my design studio, I think it was June of last year. Unofficially, I've had it for around 4-ish years. It was definitely a lot different 4 years ago than it was now. So, when I first started it, it's funny, I kind of got started out, way back in high school before, like I did work for anybody else. I was super interested in learning Photoshop and making like little graphics. I don't know if you know what Tumblr is, but that was like my thing back then. So I loved like making like, it's actually embarrassing now, but I'd make like graphics for like my favorite fonts or like stuff like
that's
that.
So fun,
and I was
though.
Like, oh, I kind of like this. Yeah, it was, I mean, it was fun in the time. So I started out with that. And then when I got into college, I really started kind of like branching out and trying to work for other people. So I started by branching out to bloggers. And I would make like their logo for them, or I would help them update their website. Another thing I did in college was I would just play around with my own website on WordPress, just because a lot of the times, like after classes or, you know, if my friends were busy and we weren't doing anything, I'd have free time on my hand. And I just messed with WordPress and messed with, you know, Photoshop and Illustrator. Yeah. So I kind of got into the realm of like bloggers and helping them update their logos. And then I realized, I was like, oh my gosh, like you can totally make a business out of this. And it's fairly easy to be successful as long as you have the right connection. So I started reaching out to bigger companies. My first actual client was actually a interior design firm in Charlotte that I still partner with now. And they kind of helped me get off my feet and start my own business. So that's how I started in college, is I kind of just built my way up. And then at the end of college, I was like, you know, most other college grads, they're like, what in the world are you going to do when you graduate? Like, it's kind of nerve wracking. I'm sure you're in that position now. You just,
yeah,
you don't know what you want to do. And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to live at home for a year. I'm going to start my business. You know, there's really nothing to lose. I wasn't really paying any overhead bills. You know, I was paying for my own life and food and everything like that, but I luckily didn't have any rent. It's honestly the best plan ever. So that's how I kind of started my business. And, you know, it's grown over the past year and a half. It's been so much fun. And I think the main point that I try to focus on when talking to other people wanting to start their own business is you just have to do it. Like, there's no right time to do it. There's no wrong time to do it. You just do it. And, you know, if you work hard, if you make sure you have systems in place and, you know, you connect as much as you can, it's going to work out. It may not be big right away, but, you know, you build it up and you go from there.
Yeah. So I actually want to ask you about when you are reaching out to bloggers, would you just have like a pitch and you would just pitch yourself like through DM or email, or would they contact you?
So, I'll back up a little bit. I started out, I had like my own quote unquote blog. I didn't really do anything with it, but I joined a lot of Facebook groups that were like blogger Facebook groups that you can join as well, and freelance Facebook groups. And so I reached out to people through those, and I would DM them on Instagram. I would Facebook message them. I would sometimes email them, but a lot of times people's mailboxes are just so full, they'll delete the email and they won't even think about it. So email probably, in my opinion, I mean, I guess for, you know, people in older generations, it might be the best way. But in my opinion, I would rather reach out to them on, you know, DM or on their website or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I reached out to them through social media and I made a connection with them. Sometimes I would just cold sell myself. I would just say like, hey, this is, you know, what I want to do. Can I please help you? Is there any way that I can help you? And other times I would just try to get to know them first and see if there was anything they needed help with. I think whichever route you go, it's important to make that relationship with the person so that they're not thinking you're just like some annoying salesperson reaching out. And because we all don't like those emails of, you know, people reaching out like that. So either way, I would just make it personalized. I personally think social media is the best way to do that.
That's what I was going to think, because like a lot of social media is like an extension of yourself. And I could even feel that with you, even though we're talking over Zoom. I'm like, you're very calm and you're very like personable, and your Instagram shows like the same thing. So yeah. I feel like that's the best way to make connections. Again, that may be like a younger generation type, I would say.
I mean, that's okay though.
Yeah. And I mean, if Instagram is like the new norm, it's like, why not use it? I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Use it. I mean, anything that you can, I would use it to your advantage.
So I also want to ask you about like the first steps that you took into building your studio. You know, I don't have like a class yet about like career prep as an artist. Like, I know you said like, I got nothing to lose. So why not try?
Yeah. So my dad actually owns his own business, and he's owned it for, probably like 15 years. So he was a really big help in my life, just encouraging me and kind of telling me the steps that I needed to take in order to be successful. I think the first thing to do if if you decide you're going to graduate college and you want to start your own business, I would lay out a list of goals that you need to have. There are things that you can Google on starting your own business. So like how to like register your business and like tax stuff and all the fun
stuff.
That's
what I'm doing
now. Yeah. So that's all like you can easily look that up on Google. But the main thing that I would do just to keep yourself kind of organized and on track and motivated is to make a list of goals you have and set those goals fairly easy. So, don't make them unattainable, because you want to have goals that, you know, you're able to reach. You don't want to have a whole list where you don't reach it by the end of the year and you're disappointed in yourself. There are some goals that are nice to have that are reaches, but I would keep most in the obtainable range. So that really helped me. So for example, in my first year of business, I really wanted to make sure that I hit like, I think it was like 1,000 email subscribers, which in the end helped me, you know, sell my services and make personal connections. And so that was my goal for a whole year, is to get 1,000 email subscribers. So I like push that on social media and on Pinterest and everything. So definitely making goals for yourself is something that helps when you start out your own business, just to keep yourself, you know, motivated and on track.
For sure. I think a lot of people think about starting a business as like the logistics of it, like you said, the taxes and registering your name. But I think a lot of people may lose creativity, you know, when they're doing it, because they get so bogged down in like the money that you may have to spend to start it, like just getting a registration of your name or an LLC. Like,
right,
it's not the cheapest thing. So then I was getting discouraged myself. I was like, Mom, can I get a loan? Like, I really don't. I'm a student. Like, I'm like, I think I can do this. And she was like, no, yeah, I think you can too. Like, take 6 months after school and just like dedicate your life to that. And I was like, well, why do I have to wait? So then I just started during COVID, because I was like, I have nothing else to do. It was kind of
And honestly, yeah. And the legal stuff of it, if you just sit down and you get it done, it can take like just a couple of days and then you're done with it. You don't have to think about it anymore. You're good.
Yeah.
And then with systems and stuff, you know, if you have a system that you want to use to automate, you know, messages or whatever it may be, that's great to get started too. That way, when you are ready to like get into the full swing of things, you can be creative and you can still have, you know, the opportunity to work on passion projects or, you know, grow your social media, whatever it may be, because you already have, you know, the quote unquote hard stuff done in the beginning.
Yeah. So what platforms do you use for like systems and you said the automated emails?
Yeah. So I use a couple of platforms. For my email subscriber list, I use Flowdesk. So they're my favorite. They are super user-friendly, very cute emails. So I use them. And then for billing and everything, I use QuickBooks. I just use the monthly online subscription, because you can basically do ACH. So you don't have to worry about checks or anything like that, or people can pay you with their debit card. Which is super easy and just, I mean, it saves you so much time.
It's like Venmo, kind of.
So that's exactly, yeah. But it's legal. You know, you send it to your accountant at the end of the year, and
it's all done.
You can, you know, they'll do your tax for you, whatever. So that's awesome for invoicing. And then to keep contracts in my clients and everything, I use Dubsado. So basically, I'll just input my clients in there. I have a couple of automated like emails that I'll send. Or, you know, I'll have checklists, like, you know, what do I need to do onboarding? What do I need to do during the design process? What do I need to do offboarding? That way I'm always on track and I'm not forgetting everything, because I feel like when you own your own business and you have to wear so many hats, there's things that you easily forget to do, or, you know, projects that might slip your mind. And I think having it in all in one place is the best way to go. And it keeps you on track.
I'll definitely look into that. Like once I start, you know, getting like, I guess, real clients.
It takes a while.
Yeah. So regarding contracts, I don't know if you want to speak on this. If not, totally fine. How did you formulate that? Like with, I guess, research, where you looked to write your contract that you would use for clients?
So I actually had a lawyer write mine because that stuff like freaks me out. I've always been kind of like, I don't know why, that stuff just always makes me nervous, and I don't ever want to get sued or have anything that's, you know, I'm held liable for. So I would definitely recommend having a lawyer write your contract. It's, you know, a one-time fee and you can use it for the rest of your time. I have one for brand design and I have one for websites and then, you know, one-off ones. But I would definitely recommend just hiring a lawyer. And it is an expense, but it's an expense that's worth it.
For sure. You're protected with that.
Right.
So I was looking on your website under your services, and you call yourself a brand design expert.
Yeah. So branding, I kind of started out niching down to branding and specific people like photographers and coaches and everything. Just because I felt like that was kind of the building blocks of your entire brand. And it really helps businesses kind of get on their feet. So that's why I chose branding. It's what I enjoy doing the most. As for what that entails, there's, as you know, your logos, your color palettes, typography choices. As for, you know, learning what all of that could be, there's a lot of YouTube videos that I looked up, literally just look up like brand design or learning brand design or anything like that. I mean, I seriously Googled my way through my business the first 3 months of it, but, you know, anything you can Google on or search on YouTube or search on Skillshare, that's a really awesome app to use. And I know you're a design major, so I'm sure that helps a lot too with just, you know, the typical parts of design. But I think I really narrowed into branding design because it was something that you could, I don't know how to word it, like almost like narrow into. So I feel like with graphic design, there's so many things you can do, right? It's like you can make podcast covers, you could make, you know, Facebook banners, anything like that. And I felt like those jobs were taking up so much of my time. So, you know, you would do one small little Facebook banner or podcast cover, or whatever it may be. And I felt like I didn't get paid as much and I always spent more time on them. And so I still offer those in my branding packages, but I don't offer them as separates anymore. And that's, again, just because, you know, time-wise, and since right now it is just me as the principal designer, it made sense for me to focus on something that was, you know, worth my time and would pay fairly well. That way, you know, I could support myself and I'd be able to live on my own and not have to rely on my parents.
Yeah. And as I was researching those services, I also noticed that you offer coaching for graphic designers. What made you want to go into coaching and what made you want to start that?
Yeah. So I started it probably like, it was a couple months ago. And basically it was because I wanted to scale without not taking on more clients, because, you know, coaching is taking on more clients, but I wanted to scale in a way that I could help other people and help other people grow. That was kind of why I started my own business, is I just love, you know, helping others, which sounds silly, but that's what I just enjoy doing it. So it's super rewarding. And, you know, again, the reason I started it is I wanted to help other designers because I was in their place before. And I feel like there's a lot of things that people keep secret, or like they won't tell you. And I don't think it's information that necessarily needs to be given away for free, because there are trade secrets to every business, right? But I think, you know, as a coach, it's helpful to just share that information to people just starting out, because there's things that you don't know, or, you know, pricing. People don't know that you can charge a really good amount when you first start out, as long as you have, you know, the skills and the ability to do it. You just have to target the right audience. And so I really just started that to help other designers kind of realize their value and their worth and how, you know, they can easily scale their business when they're just starting out. They just need, you know, the right tools and the right set. And I think when I first started out, I didn't have somebody like that. I ended up hiring a coach. I think it was last year. And she's just been so, so helpful with everything. And I wish I had that right when I started out my business, because I have grown exponentially since I've hired her. So she's convinced me to, you know, grow in ways that I didn't think I could grow, and to kind of expand my services in ways that I'm still, you know, working for myself and doing my own thing, but I'm also able to help others.
So also going along with that same idea of scaling your business, do you have any tips for just getting those initial clients? Like, I'm confident in my abilities. It's just getting into the flow of clients to produce more content.
Yeah. So I go into depth a lot in that with my coaching, but basically the basics of it are social media. So, you know, if you're just starting out and you don't have clients, do passion projects based off of the type of client that you want to attract. So if you're wanting to attract interior designers, go on a famous interior designer page. And I really love Bria Hamill, for example. So you could go on Bria Hamill's page and you can engage with her followers. You can engage with other interior designers like her, engage with her page. And then maybe make up a passion project based off of, you know, a similar interior design brand, and just start posting those passion projects to Instagram. And as you start posting them and you start growing your page, you're likely to attract people who are like that because they're interested in what you're posting and they can relate to it. Another thing is your captions and your copywriting. So to make sure that your captions and copywriting attract that kind of client. And that does take research, you know, researching whoever you want to work with. Again, if it's interior designers, researching what they're attracted to, what they're interested in, hiring a copywriter later on down the road, you know, and speaking to them and asking them to help you kind of bring that vision to life. And if not, if you can't hire a copywriter right now, again, just like looking at the keywords that these people are using, what are they really attracted to? And what's something that would catch their eye? So if it's, you know, a beachy interior designer, maybe your colors should be like blues and happy like grays and whites and everything. That way your brand and your projects are always targeting who you're wanting to work with versus just having projects that, you know, you're putting out there. And I think that hinders the business only because if you're putting random projects out there, you're not attracting a specific type of person, you know? So definitely just keeping those passion projects or whatever they meet kind of like narrowed into the type of audience that you want to attract.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. Another client related question I had for you was about how you structure your client workflow. Like, what does that process look like for you working with a client from start to finish?
Yeah, so onboarding would basically be getting your client into kind of your system or basically just starting them off with the project. So onboarding for me looks like, you know, sending them whatever materials I need from them, whether it be a questionnaire or, you know, a Pinterest board, or I have a couple of things that I ask them for. So that would be the onboarding process, basically getting any information you need from them, you know, sending them a welcome letter, hopping on phone calls or Zoom meetings to kind of meet them face to face and chat about what their needs are. So after you onboard them, then of course you have the design phase where you're designing and you're going back and forth and collaborating with them. And then the offboarding phase would basically be, for example, if you were designing a brand for them, it would be sending over all their final files, making sure they have everything they need. You know, if it was for print materials or web materials, all of the color codes, anything like that. So just making sure that they have everything they need. Typically, once I'm done, I'll send them an email like, hey, thanks for working with me. I always say, you know, since I am a small business, if you have anybody else who, you know, needs branding or needs web design, or if you would like to review me on Google or Facebook, you know, please feel free to do so. Just because I think it's as small businesses, it's so important to network and to have those referrals. And that's in the past, just probably 6 months, how my business has really grown is through referrals. So I think the offboarding process and asking people for that is super important. And that was something I used to be actually embarrassed about asking, like, you know, if you have anybody, you know, please refer me. But it's imperative for your growth. Yeah. I mean, it's huge because, you know, you could have one person talking about you to a group of five people, and then those five people talk about you. And then it's like, it's a snowball effect. So, yeah, it's like marketing 101, you know, if somebody talks about Coca-Cola or something or a new product, you're likely going to try it. So, I think that's definitely important in the offboarding process, just simply asking. And if they say no, then whatever. Most people don't say no because people are typically nice about it. But yeah, if they don't, whatever, there's no losses.
Now, regarding contracts, how did you develop those and fit that into your client system? Like, would you start working with the client if they didn't sign the contract yet, and just anything of that nature?
So I always make sure a contract is signed before, just for legal purposes, because in that contract, they basically agree to pay me. And they also agree that none of the final files will be sent until final payment is sent. And that's actually a mistake I see a lot of designers make, is they'll send over the final files as like an approval thing, and then the person will never respond, or they'll never send payment. And then they have the final files. They're going to use them. So definitely make sure you have a contract in place before you do anything, before you send them any questionnaire, any sort of anything. That way they're legally bound. And, you know, if you were to have to take any legal action, you know, you can't. But I've seen a lot this past year where I've worked with a lot of larger companies, and something that's happened due to COVID is that a lot of them, even though, so my, for example, my invoices say net 15. So if I send them on the 1st, they're due by the 15th. But a lot of larger companies just, they have so many bills they have to pay. They just don't work like that. So they might pay in 30 days. They might pay in 45 days. I have a late fee tacked on to my invoices and everything, but most of the times, like, if I know them and I know they'll pay it, I just kind of give them some squeeze time, because a lot of people right now are struggling. And I think giving people, as long as you know they'll pay you, I think giving people that extra time is definitely necessary. Now, if it is some like crazy client that just isn't paying you, that's a different story. But I feel like there's a way, at least, you know, when I have my contact form, there's a way that you can kind of weave those people out, and there's red flags that you can see before you, you know, decide to work with somebody, that will kind of tell you whether they'll pay you or not.
So what is your design process like? I guess, yeah, just the design process.
Yeah, so I have, it's a fairly long process in terms of what I do on my end, but for the client's end, it's about 4 to 6 weeks. So we'll start out with, you know, all the files I send them, whether it be questionnaire, Pinterest board, a couple more things. They'll fill all of that out, and then I'll start designing their mood board and color palette. So they approve that basically before we start anything, just so that they know kind of the direction of where their brand is going. So once that is kind of approved and done, we go into building out the brand. And, or, you know, it may be website, whatever it is, we'll go ahead and build that. I will, for a brand, I will build like a couple of different brands with different vibes, and they can pick which vibe they kind of want to go with. And then we'll go into revisions from that. And for websites, I'll just build a mock-up and we kind of go off that. So, with that, typically the revisions are around 2 revisions per, design project. I don't really see people go past 2. I honestly don't even see people go past 1, just because of the extensive research that I do before to make sure that, you know, what I'm designing for them is right on point with what they're looking for and what their ideal client's looking for. So basically, you know, once we go through the design stage, once we go through the refinement stage, I will send them all of their final files. So I'll either do that through Google Drive or Dropbox. I try to stay in Google Drive just because it's so much easier to have folders and integrate it with things. And then after I send them off their final files, they're good to go. I'll typically put together a brand style guide that will tell them how to use their brand, you know, what colors should go where they can and can't put their logo, you know, how big it can be, how big it can't be, anything that has to do with, like, if they were going to print something, what how do they print it? Like, how do they go about that? So basically everything that they need. So once I'm kind of gone and out of the picture, they're able to still, you know, be successful and use their brand to their advantage. So that's the whole process for brand design. It takes around 4 to 6 weeks for our smaller branding package. And then the bigger ones take longer depending on what they invest in.
Do you ever get clients that want both branding design and a website? How do you go about balancing both and keeping it within the timeline that you would set?
So that happens a lot. And with that, I'll start with brand design and we'll go into web design. That takes a lot longer. So what you said about, you know, people not responding and everything, what I'll typically do in my, I send over like a PDF that basically has like expectations and everything. And, what I'll send over in that is basically like, I need you to respond within 3 days. Otherwise there's like an X amount of fee. If you don't respond within these 3 days, the, deadline for our project might change. And that's not, you know, I don't have any control over that. If you don't respond, that's on you. So that's something too to keep in mind with that is like, if they don't respond, that's totally up to them, but have a late fee in there because sometimes that actually most of the times that'll get them to respond within your 3 day period. And it also just keeps everything going. So they have expectations. They know, you know, when things will be sent to them and it's just, it's a lot easier to keep things on track because, oh my gosh, when I first started, I had clients that would like ask for so many revisions. And it was because I was pricing myself wrong and I was targeting the wrong people, but a 3 week project would turn into like a 3 month project and it would drive me insane.
Wow.
And I was like, all right, I got to stop this. Yeah. I'm like, I need to just nip this in the butt and just, you know, make sure that everything's clear right when we start so that, you know, I think a lot of people going into brand design don't really know what they're getting into. So it's nice to have like clear expectations so that they know what they're getting and they know what they need to do on their end.
Yeah. Setting like boundaries with the client to know, you know, this isn't just a one way thing. It's like, I need you to make sure that we get what you want.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a collaborative process.
Yeah. So these are more like fun questions I have now to ask. And my audio was cutting out again. It just sounds like
you.
It sounds staticky on my end. I hope it doesn't pick that up. I am so confused why it's doing that. But I wanted to move into some more like fun questions, I guess you could call it. So you have like a favorite font, like a favorite color palette you like working with, favorite program, anything like that.
I do. So my favorite program to work with is probably Illustrator, just because there's so many things you can do in that, whether it's customizing a font or you could even build a mock-up of a website in there. I mean, I feel like the opportunities with Illustrator are endless. So that's my favorite app. As for favorite fonts, I have so many. I'm kind of like a font hoarder, honestly. So I have a lot of favorites. So that's kind of a hard question to answer, but I love any sort of Adobe font. They have really great fonts. And then Creative Market also has some awesome fonts. As for like premium fonts that I use, I typically find them through Typewolf. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he has like really great, you know, font pairings and things like that. So that's a great place to find inspiration for fonts. But as for favorite fonts, I have way too many to name them.
And that was Typewolf, you said?
Yes, Typewolf.
Okay.
Weird name, but it's a really great resource.
Yeah, and about the hoarding fonts, I was like looking at my external hard drive and I was like, do I go through it? Like, is it even worth it? Do I just keep them? I'm like, you know what? I'll keep it. And then worst case, I'm probably going to have to get a larger external anyway. So
yeah,
I'm just keeping it. I just didn't want
to keep them.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. And I feel like you'll eventually find a use for them with some sort of project. So
yeah, exactly. So I want to talk about your website specifically. Was that made in WordPress?
Yep.
Okay. I'm in a WordPress class right now. So it's going to be, I hope I can move my website from Wix to WordPress. Do you have any tips for working within WordPress? Like, I guess with the design aspect of it, you know, making it look pretty.
not really, only because it's coding knowledge. So I think just learning coding, which is, I hate even saying that because it's such a hassle and it's such a pain, but coding knowledge is really what's going to help you make it look pretty. And with inspiration and stuff, I mean, you can look up inspiration on Pinterest, you can look at other designers' websites. There's a lot of inspiration to be found on the internet, but as for learning it, it's unfortunately just coding.
No, yeah, I'm also in a Dreamweaver class. I don't think Dreamweaver is as much anymore. And that's at least what my professor said. But so I guess I'll get coding in there and then I could transfer that to WordPress. you know, I'm kind of just going with it. You know, I don't know. I'm going with it. I'm a student. This is my last year. These are like the senior level courses and I'm just trying to, get it done while also still being able to apply it to my current business. I even feel weird saying business, but I have to get over that. So
yeah, get over it. It's your business. You got it.
So I wanted to move into, I guess deeper questions. I couldn't think of a better name for this. So if you have any suggestions, let me know. The first one is, at least I know myself as like a student with freelancing, we're like, you're told corporate, make sure you get the internships to go to corporate. But I worked in corporate for an internship and I didn't love it. So I was like,
me too.
And it's like, it wasn't terrible, but it's like the minute I would do something that was slightly different, it would just be like, no. So then I was like, okay, well, I can do this myself. So that's kind of where I came up with the idea of the name of the podcast. Like me and my friends, we came up with, the daring to do something. So dare to design. It was like a fun play on words. So did you experience that post-grad? Like, I know you said your dad was like really pushing you to go for it, but how did you, I guess, convince yourself with like the confidence levels and just going for it?
To be completely honest, I didn't. I just woke up one morning. I'm like, I was nervous. I mean, I have anxiety. I think I was like anybody else, I didn't know if I was going to make it, but I just went for it because I think, again, it's not knowing that, it's knowing that you can do it, but it's not like you wake up one day and you're like, oh, I can do this. This is totally possible. Like you wake up one morning and you're like, you know what, if I want to get this done, I have to start it. So I literally just woke up one morning like, all right, I'm going to start my website. I'm going to register my business. I'm just going to do it. I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going to worry about it. It was super stressful. I'm not going to lie in the beginning, but it's all worth it. And as long as you just take it step by step, it's totally fine. But as for that, I just kind of woke up one morning and decided to do it.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of in the same boat with that, with like COVID and everything. I was like, you know what? Why not? So
yeah, just do it.
And what about, comparison and criticism? How have you dealt with that as like a creative person?
So I think comparison is hard. I think one thing to keep in mind as a creator is that we all have different styles. So we also all have different versions of success. So one person's success is not going to look like your success. And just because, one person is doing really well with a certain style doesn't mean that that should be your style or, that should be who you are. Because I think as creators, we need to stand out and we need to, do our own thing and we need to make a plan in our path of our own. So I'm not going to lie, it is hard sometimes to not compare yourself to other people who have like 100,000 or 200,000 followers thinking they're successful. But the fact of the matter is, everyone has their own different version of success. And as long as you're trying hard and as long as, you're putting all of your effort into it, you should be proud of yourself because not a lot of people have the courage or the confidence to go into that. As for criticism, for me, it was hard to take. I am such a people pleaser. So criticism is a little bit difficult for me to take at first. And I'm also super sensitive. So at the beginning, like any sort of criticism I took so personally, which is wrong. I shouldn't take it personally. And I've learned that now. But I think with criticism, what's good about it is that it teaches you you know, how to grow and how to learn from anything, any sort of mistake or anything like that. So, you know, when I first started out, even when I didn't have my business, I would have people say, you know, oh, I wish you did this or I wish you did that. And I think there's something to be learned from it, right? So if somebody would like something from your design, or if somebody would, you know, like something changed, that's something to take to heart. And sometimes people have criticism, but it doesn't really matter. And, you know, you'll have a crazy client that's just kind of rude and you have to brush it off and not think about it. But other times you'll have clients who are, you know, they really love your work, but they have things that they want changed, or they have things that they just don't like. And that's not something to take personally. You're designing this for them. You're doing this for them. The end, it's really for them. So just taking that criticism to heart and, you know, thinking about it in a way of like, okay, this person's trying to help me. They're not trying to hinder me. In most cases, cases not, but in most cases, they're trying to help you. So just keeping that in mind when you get any sort of criticism and taking it to heart, which, you know, is a lot easier said than done, but it's worth it in the end.
Yeah. So like reframing the perspective around criticism, you know, I know when I was first like a freshman and my professor, she was like, okay, I'm going to act as like the head creative director, and we would do our work and she would just be like, no. And I was like, okay, but like, what about it? And she wasn't expecting me to like,
yeah, say that. Bounce
back, but I was just like, damn, this is,
that's important.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's exactly like, I've had clients in the past that have just said no. And I'm like, okay, well, what about it? Like, you shouldn't just take it personally and be like, okay, fine, you don't like my work, whatever. You should keep pressing. Like, okay, what do you not like about it? What can we change? What can we make better to, because sometimes it's like the smallest thing. It's like, oh, I don't like the way the R looks, and you change it and it's perfect. Like, it's normally super simple stuff that's easily fixable. You just kind of have to dig into what they're thinking.
Yeah, that's so true. Just like the small things, or they end up liking the original, or.
Yeah. That always happens. They always like the original.
So I want to move into advice to like end off this episode. So if you could tell yourself from 3 years ago, a single piece of advice, what would it be?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Thank you.
Probably to believe in yourself, which, you know, is so simple, but I think a lot of us, when we're starting our own business or, you know, we're venturing out, we're so nervous about, you know, what other people think of us, or, you know, whether we're going to fail or not. And I think it's important to just believe in yourself. If you fail, that's great. That's one more step up to success, right? So, you know, there's ways that you can fix things that you're doing wrong, or, you know, just believing in yourself in general. I think that's something that as humans, we really struggle with. But if you truly believe in yourself, and if, you know, you trust that you can do something, you're so capable of it. Like, it's crazy how capable we all are. We just have to believe that we're actually capable. And that's, I think, what holds people back when they're starting their own business, or when they, you know, want to venture out on their own, is that they're holding themselves back. There's nothing else holding themselves back. People, there's clients out there, there's, you know, you can grow, you can learn, but it's really us that's holding ourselves back. And I think that's super important to just remember that you're capable, and it's totally doable.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've experienced that with just even this podcast. Like, I would reach out to people, and the fact that like you even responded to me, I was like, oh, wow. Like, she wouldn't mind like speaking on the podcast.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, we hold ourselves to such a high standard, and not that you shouldn't, but it's like, you know, believing in yourself without, you know, making life harder, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. People are a lot nicer than we kind of play them out to be in our heads sometimes.
Yeah. So if you have, man, this audio is really bugging. If you have any like final words that you would like to say, any pieces of advice for anyone post-grad, if not, like, totally cool. But yeah, that's kind of what I have planned for now.
Awesome. I think we're honestly good to go with that little piece of advice at the end.
Yeah, I think that was a really good ending. And if you want to go ahead and plug yourself, you know, your socials and your website.
Yeah, so you can find me on social. Oh my gosh, let me redo that. I just dropped my water.
You're fine.
Okay. You can find me on social media at mckinley.media. On Pinterest, it's at Sarah McKinley with two H's with Sarah. And then my website is www.mckinley-media.com.
Okay. Oh my God. And I forgot. I think I saw that on Pinterest you had like 2 million or something monthly views. That's insane.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I don't, it like happened overnight. It was crazy, but I've put a lot of work into that.
I definitely think I have some of your pins saved because like I was looking on Instagram and I was like, that's so familiar. But yeah, thank you so much for chatting and sharing your experience.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to follow the Dare to Design Instagram account for more content. It's at daretodesign.podcast. The link will also be in the description of this episode. All right, again, thank you so much for listening to today's episode, and I'll talk to you later.